Welcome back to Armchair Quarterbacks. It's been a while, Sam.
I'm surprised we're still here.
That we have kept our jobs?
Pretty much. I mean, the state of the industry, everything that's going on, it's kind of crazy.
I know. I do appreciate that we both appreciate that we have jobs and that we cover sports for a living and that we get paid to do it. And right now we're getting paid to eat pizza on the back deck of Foo Bar.
With the sun setting majestically behind us, yeah. Bathing our pizza in the warm glow of the purple and blue and pink hues of the afternoon, evening time.
That's why you're the writer.
Yep, that totally works. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Tried to do something there. I think it was like a solid C minus effort.
That's how I was telling you how like the old writers did it back in like the dead ball era when they would talk about
the golden age.
They would romanticize like the setting and the all this imagery.
Well,
like,
I mean, we just got done watching Hard Knocks, you know, like a couple weeks ago, right? And I mean, they opened the Hard Knocks with the autumn wind is a raider,
yeah,
pillaging something something something. It's like, wow, who came up with this?
Yeah, because they say, like, with stories, like, you should definitely set the scene, you know? And especially with, like, with TV broadcasts, you should definitely never start with the anchor. Because if you start out with the anchor just reading something, it's probably a bad story as opposed to hard-knocking it. And, yeah.
Here at the Daily News, we always like to hard-knock it.
Lot of imagery, lot of extraness, lot of flowery writing, way over the top.
Probably too much.
Take
if
it
we're
or
being honest, we could take it down a few
take
pegs.
It or leave it.
Set the bar a little bit lower.
But please don't leave it or egos can't take it. So if you have any constructive criticism, leave it to yourself. Just don't tell us.
Unless it's like grammar stuff, I'm always looking to improve there.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a reader recently give me crap about some grammar thing. And I was like, look, we're overworked sometimes. Friday nights, we're putting out like 10 stories.
I was working until 5 a.m. on Friday, trying to make sure that when you woke up, you had something to read. So yeah, we're putting in the effort.
I appreciate you, Sam.
Thanks, Seth. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Which we do need to preface that people just need to know our deadlines now. They're officially 7:30. So that's not necessarily a good thing for us because it means we still need to post everything online and we end up doing more because there isn't a deadline to meet. So instead of having roundup, we end up doing a game for every football game.
Which I think is a good compromise.
It
you
is.
Know, I mean, with no deadline, you know, there's sort of an incentive to almost work a little bit later now, you know? Because, I mean, that lead up to deadline was always real stressful, but also, like, real helpful almost in a way. You know,
it
puts your butt to the fire a little bit, gets you going. But, yeah, I think, you know, like Sean Arntz from Freeport has reached out and told us several times that he's very appreciative of this. And I hope a lot of people feel the same way, that all of their teams are getting, you know, at least something online every Saturday morning when they wake up.
The numbers
and then in the paper on Sunday, on Sunday morning.
The online numbers are indicative of the extra work too, because our online guy, Dell Stone, who's been here for, I mean, gosh, Dell's an institution. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day.
Dell is Fort Walton Beach.
He is a lifer. But he'll email us on Saturday and say, appreciate it, photographers and Sam and Seth for carrying our traffic Saturday. So I think it's paying off.
But that said, if there's anything that you think we can improve on, anything you'd like to see, we're always open to suggestions.
Shut the hell up. I mean, we appreciate your feedback, readers. We love you. You know, I was looking at the football tab recently before we get into this week's matchups. Man, I mean, how many times have we joked about the Danny Dozens? There's a lot of misses, and we apologize for that.
There were some whiffs this year. I don't think with the new districts in place, you know, we got teams in 7A, 6A, 5A, 4A, 3A, 2A, and 1A this year, I think. I mean, there was a lot of turnover, a lot of new stuff. So, like, I think we get a little bit of leeway. But, yeah, there was a lot of unknowns going into this year that we did not necessarily anticipate.
Our hits were beautiful, though. They were perfect.
Shout out Brandon Siples, Mr. 1,000 yards from scrimmage in just four games.
I mean, Siples, Brunson, Joe Brunson, Will Koch, Aiden Dark, Marlon Courtney's still looking good, even if they're 3-2. There were some hits.
Cade Kutsaratus is still going to Georgia Tech. He's playing center this year. I mean, hard to miss on that one. Georgia Tech saw the same thing we did.
Exactly.
Georgia Tech definitely got there first, but
yeah, Jimmy Neutron over there in Crestview. What do you think? What do you think if we could recast it? I've got some ideas. What's your first round? What's your first draft pick? You know, what's your first, you know, replacement?
New Dandy Dozen.
Yeah. Assuming we have, so we just mentioned five guys: Siples, Dart, Courtney, Koch, Brunson. Those are not replaceable. Cade Kutsaratis, six. We didn't miss on those. Okay.
So let's go right off the top. I think DT Graham, we talked about him a little bit in the office just today. You know, in the games that we've seen, he's got four interceptions. Two of them went back for touchdowns.
He blocks every kick.
Yeah, we overlooked him a little bit because he's playing at Choctaw, and Choctaw's been coming off some rough years.
And Greg Thomas did not sell him. And it's not like Greg Thomas does not like him, but Greg Thomas knew it was going to be kind of a mediocre year, you know. And, you know, the defense was coming off allowing like 36, 37 points a game. How do you award a kid after that defensive effort? And that's what I kind of told him at the NISL game. When they were losing 41-0, he comes up to me and he's like, hey, how do you get on that Dandy Dozen? I'm like, dude, bruh, your defense was garbage last year. I mean, it's not your fault, but you take the hit for that.
So that's one. Who you got? Who's next?
Let's stay with the defense. Grady Kelly at Navarre.
Oh, my God.
Who is, like, the best defensive lineman ever, apparently.
Okay, so I watched him play at Lincoln, and there's some debate on this. I counted six sacks in that game. He counted eight. Somebody else split the difference and called it seven. So it's probably in the neighborhood of seven sacks in one game against Lincoln, which is an awesome, awesome football program out in Tallahassee.
All right, these are the unofficial numbers that I saw from adding all this stuff up and then what Navarre provided me. But apparently he has 16 tackles for a loss, 13 sacks, 21 quarterback hurries. That's ridiculous.
Kid's in line for Defensive Player of the Year right now. Like, yeah. I mean, he's the front runner.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's stay with the defense. So, definitely those two are, like, automatics. And I feel like we should choose someone from Niceville, too. I feel like Logan Schaefer should have been on there.
Definitely one of their top defensive linemen this year. He's always in the backfield making a play, just a lot like Grady Kelly.
His tackles are up there. His sacks are up there. He's a smart kid. He's a senior. I always talk to him. I talk to him every time because he's a brilliant quote, too. It could be Peyton Curl, too. You know, you talk about McNulty.
Yep, had two interceptions this last week in a big win against Lincoln.
I mean, hindsight, it's hard to give any more to Niceville than three, considering that they first round exit for three straight years. We weren't giving them four. That would have been like favoritism, because we didn't see this coming.
We're always fair at the Daily News.
Yeah,
no matter what you think.
Maybe Scarborough deserves to stay on there. Maybe he's having a good year, even though Niceville kind of shut him down. But is that his fault?
Hard to say. I mean, we knew coming into this year that Crestview was going to be losing Bryson Norris, Weston II, Luther Fagalima off that line. Like, there were going to be some new guys in there. Even Cameron Moffitt, who is a Dandy Dozen selection this year, didn't quite start all of last year. But, I mean, he's projectable. He's big. So, you know, there's a learning curve there in Crestview. And to his credit, Taylor Scarborough has overcome it. He's got over 500 rushing yards through the first five games, even if, you know, some of those were losses, some of those were, you know, kind of bad
efforts. It's not a definitive miss. It's not. Fort Walton Beach was looking really good after that 2-0 start. We were thinking like someone like Jay Jarrett, but now they're 2-3 and they're kind of regressed.
To his credit, though, I mean, Jay Jarrett had another big game this past week going over 100 yards.
So maybe
did fumble, though, late in the game. So that was kind of a knock on him, but I mean, he has still looked really good. Like, I think when people go to game plan for Fort Walton Beach this year, it starts with Jay Jarrett. That's the guy you got to shut down.
Yeah, so maybe we do Peyton Curl and Logan Schaefer to go along with Aiden Dark and Will Koch. So now we're near and closer. And we talked about this earlier. Jay Mallon, I was talking to you earlier, he's morphed it. He's had three straight 100-yard receiving games. He's unguardable. He had one bad game. Fort Walton Beach guarded him. We're going to be telling him to two catches for 17 yards. But after that, he's taken off. And that was kind of, I don't know, they were just overmatched in that one.
It was a matter, I think, of getting the offensive line kind of set over there in South Walton, making sure that quarterback Drake Roberts has, you know, enough time to get the ball to JML. And that was kind of their undoing in the first three games of the season, all losses. But now that they've kind of got that figured out a little bit, they're running the ball a little bit better. You know, Drake's got some time, and he's turning in some big performances.
Yeah. And then I was looking at, speaking of misses, I was looking at her projections, and we've missed on a lot of projections so far. Hindsight's 20/20. but we've hit on some. But we didn't anticipate the area being this good at football this year. I mean, it's been a surprise. Like, a lot of teams have been a surprise.
A lot of teams have surprised. I mean, I think right off the top, you've got Niceville and Freeport. Got an airplane coming in. Always loud with the freedom here in Fort Walton Beach.
Freeport, we predicted 5-5. They've already matched their 5 wins. Total miss. Niceville, 7-4. We did pick them going to playoffs like for the 19th straight year. They're 5-0.
Let's circle back to Freeport, though, here real quick, because they're going to play – they're 5-0 already. We said that. They're going to play 0-5 Shipley this week.
Yeah.
That could be win 6 in a row.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah.
Walton and Fort Walton Beach, they've already matched. We both predicted them 2-8. I don't feel so bad about those predictions, though. Walton's going to end up with more than 2 wins because they got a cupcake game on the schedule left. But Fort Walton Beach, they could win the Choctaw game. They could finish with 4 or 5 wins, but maybe we could have gotten 3 wins with each of them. But not total misses.
And, circling back to Walton, I wrote about them today. You were reading. Each of their 3 losses so far this year have all been by 1 score.
They could be 5-0, yeah.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago it was an interception inside the red zone that ended that game. It was a shootout against Freeport. They were leading 7-0 after 3, and then Brandon Siples went off. Made sure that game was a 13-7 Freeport win. And then last week, it was sort of the same story. They were trading scores, and it just didn't go their way. They didn't punch last in that game. So, I mean, they're there. They're on the cusp of, being one of those teams. I mean, I think they're a team that other teams now are starting to, look at with, some hesitation.
Yeah, Crestview, big miss. They can turn it around. There's no, 2-3, season's not over. They should finish up with 5 or 6 wins at least and make the playoffs. We've seen that 7-8 spot go to like sub 500 teams. So Crestview should be fine. They do have Madison County left. They have Lincoln left. They'll be severe underdogs in both of those.
And Navarre.
Oh crap!
Not to mention they're playing Chiles this week, and Chiles has started 3-1. We didn't expect them to be as good as they are. Over
what did
in
they
Tallahassee.
Win? Yeah. What did they win? Like, what did they win? What did they win? 2-8 or 3-7?
It would be, I don't know. I mean, Tim Hatton has talked about that they scheduled tough on purpose.
It's not our fault. You covered the state championship for the basketball program. We were riding high from their Final Four in the gridiron. We had blinders on for Crestview.
We were bleeding Crestview Bulldog red for a while, and now it's all over the floor, and we need to mop it up a little bit.
Where we're hitting well right now. Baker 13-1, we predicted.
Oh yeah, big on us to predict Baker was going
to
win.
Baker was supposed to be down this year. Choctaw 4-6, man, we are right on the money with them right now. They're 2-3. They are on pace for 4-6. That's looking good. Navarre 12-2. I think they're gonna do well. I mean, they're not gonna be favored this week against Niceville. We'll talk about that later. But we had them making the playoffs. Sowall, I take full responsibility for Sowall.
Sowall was coming off a playoff appearance and a playoff victory last year. So, I mean, you thought they were about to turn the corner, especially when they've got that potent combination of Drake Roberts and J.M. Allen. I mean, that was returning.
Two straight wins. They're 2-3. There's nothing wrong with that. Rocky, we had under 500, but barely. Rocky's going to win this week. Rocky is playing a team that went 0-9 last year. So we'll see with the John Paul second. So I feel like they're gonna get in the win column. But no, I wasn't in love with our predictions. Let's just call it. I was drinking that.
Call a spade a spade.
Yeah, I don't know. We were. Usually we're too optimistic. This year we weren't optimistic enough. So I don't know. Let's get into these matchups. You ready
for the week? Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'll be at Niceville, Navarre, which is gonna be at Bennett C. Russell Stadium. Interesting stat, Jay Walls owns Niceville. He officially has, he's like, LeBron tried to trademark Taco Tuesday? Walls might as well trademark All I Do Is Beat Niceville. Hatton was like trying to do it, and then he's like, no, I got it. And he's beaten him 5 straight times. That doesn't happen. Crestview is so happy about their 4-game win streak, which was snapped. So maybe this is the year Niceville, this is a redemption tour is what Jordan Fowler called it. But Niceville is headed to Navarre. It's going to be a tough environment. But you know who's not there? Jonte Wright.
Who's going off for Colorado State. He scores like 2 touchdowns every week.
What a beast. But Navarre is 3-2. Niceville is 5-0. no one can
Navarre score. Coming off two straight losses, too. So, like, are they going to rise to the challenge this week? They lost to Lincoln, and they lost to Pine Forest last week?
Yeah, bad loss to Pine Forest.
That was so very strange.
That was weird.
All parties involved, I'm sure. That was a Twilight Zone kind of game.
And Lincoln could have been worse. You were at the game. I mean, it wasn't that pretty. It was a two-touchdown game, but it could have been worse.
It was 35-14 late in that game before they got on the board with a kind of a garbage time score to make it look a little bit prettier. But, like, standing on the sideline for that game, maybe it was because I was tired from all of the driving to Tallahassee, but, like, it didn't really feel like Navarre was ever out of it.
Okay. So maybe Grady Kelly sacks Will Cope for 17 sacks, and they pull out a win. Maybe. Grady Kelly's got to put the team on his back. Marlon Courtney's got to be a superhuman, you know, whatever. But that's a good matchup. I can't wait for that. That's the game of the week. You will be at what we were talking about earlier, Crestview Childs.
And another big game.
Must win for Crestview? I mean, it sounds like it.
They're all must wins at this point, is what Tim Hatton said. There's no margin for error now that they're 1-1 in district play. With all three of the Tallahassee teams and Navarre remaining in that district slate, they have to win out, really, to be in the conversation for the playoffs, to feel very secure about having a playoff spot. They can probably lose about one or two more games, maybe.
Man, I do not like Chase Moulton's game that much, too. I miss Gillis, you know, watching them. And no offense to Moulton. It's just he doesn't have the same offensive line and everything like that, but I just don't think
he doesn't have the same offensive line. He doesn't have the voice in twins. So I think a lot of what has really ailed Crestview this year is probably just trying to figure out sort of what they have and how to use it. You know, I'm sure they had an idea going into the year of what, you know, they were going to try and do. And, you know, when that fails, you kind of got to go back to the drawing board a little bit. But, I mean, they still got weapons. Marquise McCoy last week in that big 47-7 win over Tate, again, had two passing touchdowns, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown. Oh, so he's a weapon.
Yeah.
That's the second time he scored three ways in a single game this year.
I didn't see him out of the Wildcat at all, too, when I was watching him play Niceville. So I was just shocked just to not see him. Apparently he can't throw a ball, is what I've heard. So I don't know that, but I didn't even see him, and they didn't line him up under center. So I was kind of disappointed.
No, that was, I guess, in talking to Coach Hatton last Friday night, that was a big emphasis on their game plan going into Tate, was getting him some snaps at quarterback, trying to get him going a little bit. Because when he's back there, he's a big part of their offense, and, I mean, he takes a little bit of the pressure off of Taylor Scarborough, off of Chase Moulton to get some things done. So
Mosley is coming to Fort Walton Beach, who, you know, we heard a lot of chatter on social media and some stuff from fans being like, when we predicted 2-8 and they started off 2-0, beat a South Walton team, you know, that was a decent win, went to Panama City, scored a win, you know, 2-0.
And they were throwing us under the bus.
Now we're looking okay, honestly. You know, I mean, they gave Niceville a good game. That was a good loss. That was a good morale loss.
But sort of each week it seems like they regress a little bit more. Like that Niceville loss, it's like it got in their head or something like that.
And now
they scored just 3 points last week. I mean, this is a team with Jay Jarrett, you know, in the backfield, who has the potential really to go off on any given carry.
So this Mosley team beat them 41-14 last year, and this is not the same Fort Walton Beach team from last year, but that's pretty lopsided. But meanwhile, Mosley beat Pace 8-6, the team that held Fort Walton Beach to 3 points last week. So Mosley's got a good defense. Mosley, you know, Mosley lost to Niceville 15-0, so they held Niceville to 15 points. They obviously got a good defense. So that's, you know, that's a good common opponent, but Fort Walton Beach loses 17-3 in that game. It appears that Mosley, they're going to be the underdogs even facing Mosley at home.
Working in Fort Walton Beach's favor, though, I saw an article on our sister paper, the News Herald, that Mosley's going to be without its head coach this week. He's suspended.
Yeah, had an assistant coach.
For some, like, ineligible assistant coach.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that. This guy must have been shady if they flagged him for that. Yeah, so that bodes well, not having their fearless leader. Here's a story I wrote about the other day. The War on Highway 4. What a great nickname. And that's Jay Baker.
What a great nickname and what a crappy rivalry.
What a crappy rivalry. The War on Highway 4, you think that's going to be a war. You're like hunkering down. You put your eye black under everybody's eyes. You liver.
Games that end like 10-9 or something like that.
Yeah,
no. Baker owns Jay. Baker owns Jay.
God, I mean, they outscore him like 40-10 every year, basically, on average. For the last 10 years, they've won. Baker's 1-4 this year. Jay's 1-4. Baker's 4-0. Baker's ranked number two. Jay didn't even show up on any ranking unless you're talking about the top 10 worst teams, you know. So Baker is hosting two. They've had that one scare with Northview, 14-12. But then they have a lot of cupcakes on the schedule, too.
This area is not necessarily rife, I think, with 1A talent.
No.
It's pretty much Baker in the field.
Yeah, the one thing we're looking forward to is in 2 weeks we got Freeport hosting Baker. Now that's going to be a good game. Or at least a good test.
And they matched up, of course, in the playoffs last year in that first round where Freeport snuck in with a 5-5 record, I think it was. And Freeport got smacked around a little bit. So this is going to be a good revenge game for Freeport. See kind of how they match up against, you know, the creme de la creme of 1A football.
Well, we were talking about earlier, now with our Dane Dozen picks, we can look a lot better if Sowell can go to Mariana and score a win there. Because Mariana is 4-1. Just beat Walton. Walton beat South Walton 27-0. So this common opponent thing doesn't look very good for them. Granted, Mariana barely snuck through Walton 24-21, but transitive property does not bode well for South Walton. But South Walton, they also have a common opponent in Port St. Joe, and both of them beat Port St. Joe the exact same. So maybe South Walton's figured out. South Walton can go to Mariana and win and be 3-3. They'll be looking at a playoff spot. We'll be feeling a little better.
Everything is rosy if they come out on the other side of this game Friday at 500. And, I mean, coming off a big 42-7 win against Bay last Thursday on a short week. I know Bay is not necessarily a world beater out there over in Panama City, but, like, good teams are supposed to beat bad teams by a lot.
Yeah.
So if you do that, you know you're kind of on the right track.
And apparently Tyler Mitchum's getting going in the backfield, and that South Walton needs we've talked about this before, but Tiza is committed to the 50-50, 60-40 run to pass when that offense is so built for being an air raid offense. So Tyler Mitchum only has like 200 yards on the season, but they got him going last week. He did catch, and he caught like a big pass for a touchdown too. So, you know, they're trying to get him going. He's going a little bit, so credit to them on that. We talked about Walton. Snake Pit and Walton earlier is hosting Rutherford. Both teams are 2-3. You know, Walton just keeps losing by a possession. I haven't seen Walton. You got to see Walton against Freeport. It appears that defense is a real deal. Shutting out South Walton, shutting out Cyples for the most part for three quarters. I mean, this would be a big win for them.
And really, I mean, in talking to Coach Bobby Moore, it usually just comes down to a couple of mistakes here and there. You know, they're only ever one play away. So, you know, they're still young. They're coming off a year last year where they just won the one game. They're still trying to figure out how to win in most cases, and they're close. I mean, you get that one play a game that you need, we're talking about a way different season at this point.
We were talking about him earlier, Freeport, Mr. Brandon Cyples' team, 5-0 at Chipley, 0-5, awful.
Of all the games we've got this week, though, like, this one feels the most like a trap game.
Yeah.
Like, Chipley 2 years ago was great. Like, we were talking about they were the biggest competition for Baker, and in the last 2 years, okay, so 2 years ago they were 8-4. Last year they finished 4-5, but I'm pretty sure they were affected by Hurricane Michael. This year, no wins.
Freeport beat them 20-18 last year, barely. It was a huge win for Freeport. I mean, is it really that lopsided 5-0 and 0-5? Probably not. That's UGA. Rocky, the last one, hosting St. John Paul. Well, the good news.
Does Rocky Bayou actually field a team, or do they just let the other team come out and score for four quarters and then go home?
I feel like the Rocky kids just get no relief. Like, they play defense, they trudge out for special teams, and they go out on offense. It's just,
I mean, good on them for fielding a football team and showing up every week. That just shows a lot of character. But, like, what their problem is, nothing they can do. I mean, they're a private school. They don't have high enrollment. Even this year when they've got, like, a record turnout of kids, like, what can you do? You're a private school. I mean, you're trying your hardest. And I know all of those kids go out there and they try their hardest every week. But, I mean, it's just, you can't fix what Rocky's problem is.
Yeah. Josh Childers, great dude. He has a couple of FCSAA state championships. But, man, nothing's – I don't know, man. This has been rebuilding mode for a long time. But
it's just – it's kind of painful to watch, and you just feel bad, but you hope for the best.
So next week we're going to do superlatives with our once we've seen everybody play five games, we're going to do the midseason awards. We kind of touched upon it tonight, but if you had to choose – Small school, large school, defense and offense player of the year, who do you go with?
Okay, for small school offensive player of the year, it's got to be Brandon Sipples. Like, there's... maybe it's Joe Brunson, but, like, really, the competition doesn't feel that close right now. I mean...
Breaker was expected to do this. You know, Freeport wasn't. I feel like their numbers are really comparable. You know, and Brunson's played one less game, and they're both averaging, like, 175 rushing yards a game, but Sipples, man, he's putting the team on his back, I feel like.
But on the other hand, for defensive player of the year, it is definitely whoever Matt Brunson says it is, because...
That's what I was going to say.
Because it's always that guy.
It may be Joe Brunson, too. That dude is a best... That dude's a hoss. Can we just give him player of the year? I would go with the same as you. I think what we touched on earlier is right now it's Grady Kelly's to lose for Navarre.
If he continues in the large school category.
In the large school category. And then the large school offensive player of the year, I think it's got to be Will Koch, man. The dude doesn't have the most amazing numbers. He has great numbers. So here's his numbers. He has like 600 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, rushing 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. But the guy just operates the game so efficiently. He doesn't turn the ball over. You know, he picks up 4 or 5 yards every time he runs the ball. The dude used to be just an injury train wreck, you know, anytime he ran the ball. But we saw him in the offseason run these, like, 4-3, 4-4 track runner. We were like, who is this Will Koch?
And that's, I mean, you know, the knock on him, like you said, is the injuries. Every time he goes into the pile, I hold my breath a little
bit.
Seriously. Because, like, you don't want to see him go down. The kid's 6'3". Last week against Lincoln, he throws a game-winning touchdown pass on the last play of the game. Not an easy throw either. I mean, that was a tough throw to make. Even if the guy was wide open, it's still a tough throw to make there, just given the situation. But, yeah, I mean, if he stays healthy, if Niceville continues to play the way they've been playing, you know, he's definitely riding a great defense a little bit right now. But, I mean, the offense is no slouch. The offense is doing what it needs to do, and that's a lot in part because of Koch. I mean, they got a lot of young talent underneath him, and he's making it work.
Yeah, and Sean Parker's a good running back. We saw his second effort TD last week. He's got 400 yards on the year. He's doing well. But Will Koch, he's not a Brandon Sipples type running back. He's not going to get you 120, 130 yards every game out. So Will Koch is carrying the ball 15, 20 times a game. Like, he's their main running back, basically.
Niceville's got some warriors this year, and that's kind of what Grant Thompson will tell you when you ask him after games. Like, these dudes, they're warriors from one to I know it's not 53 in high school, but from 1 to 53, these dudes are warriors.
And I love Will Koch's weapons. You know, like, I like Luke Untrese, and, you know, and I like the Dominique kid, you know, and they have the Roman Prestari. I mean, they have some good – they have all these, like – they just churn out these good white receivers, these Edelman-type receivers who have, like, the hands of, like – you know, they have to stick them on their hands.
And, gosh, who's number 14 playing tight end and linebacker for him? I'm blanking on his name right now. And I talked to him last week. I feel terrible.
Gosh. Is that an Anacarico kid or whatever?
Yes, Dom Anacarico.
Anacarico. Sorry, I butchered that name.
Dude, over the middle.
That dude does so much.
He was taking snaps out of the backfield. He was playing linebacker last week.
Yeah.
He's listed as a tight end, but I feel like I see him line up in the backfield more as sort of that fullback, sort of tight end hybrid more often than not. I mean, that dude's a weapon.
And his sister was a hoss on the hardwood. She's a good basketball player. Yeah, this is the Niceville I appreciate covering. It's just a bunch of white guys, like, seriously, that don't have much talent but just produce, you know?
You can live vicariously through them, can't you, Seth Stringer, 5'10" white guy.
The ones that should not be doing what they're doing.
Oh,
it's good to be back, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Who you got for Coach of the Year right now?
That's a good question.
To me, it's easy. It's Sean Arntz over at Freeport. We didn't expect him to do this.
See,
and it's Grant Thompson at Niceville for the same reason. We didn't expect this. Both
That's
of
true.
These guys are showing out. Like, no offense to Matt Brunson.
Is Matt Brunson sweating it over there? Like, Sean Arntz could probably go 7-3 and win this thing. I mean, Matt Brunson is just – we all expect it from Matt Brunson. Matt Brunson is a
– he set the bar high for himself over there.
The dude is one of Crispy. He's one of Baker. He's like our Kevin Craig of football coaches. Like,
Shout out Kevin Craig, who was an FHSAA Hall of Fame inductee this past week. That's that dude, Kevin Craig.
That's my dude. So, okay, yeah, I agree with you, though. Arntz has earned it. Grant Thompson, and, man, you posted his post-game huddle. That dude is all energy. The kids are botting in. Like, they see this, like, 35, 36-year-old guy, mid-30s guy, and they're like, I mean, dude's a couple years older than me. And they bought in. They're like, this dude has so much exuberance and youth. Yeah, I go with that, too. Well, the pizza has arrived, Sam.
The pizza has arrived.
Yep.
Just anywhere. All right. Thank you very much. The pizza has arrived, which means it's time for us to sign off.
We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening.
Deuces. It's your life.